Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson, and you have made it through another week in 2021, which means we are here to help you get ready for your weekend. Coming up, we're going to hear about what this week's inauguration was like from someone who was there in real life. Carol Moseley Braun, the first Black woman to be elected to the U.S. Senate. But first, we're going to take a look back at the week that was with two excellent panelists. Joining me this week, we have Travell Anderson. They're an entertainment journalist. Travell, hi.
Hello.
And we have Jarrett Hill. He's a journalist and writer. Jarrett, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you two host the podcast Fan Tie Together, which you call a show all about the complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I want to talk about the week that was, which especially means, of course, the inauguration. But I'm curious, like, where y'all think we fall in sort of like the gray area spectrum these days. It feels to me like there's more of it than ever before. I don't know if that's because I'm older or just because like pandemic and political insurrection or what. But I don't know. I was just curious what you two think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually a good thing that we see so much gray area now, right? I feel like we got used to just like wanting to like throw people away or throw things away, you know, the cancel culture of it all. And I think now we're at least willing to recognize the fact that like some people at least, right, can be redeemed. Some things you can actually still love, even though they have some aspects that you'd rather not talk about. You know, I feel like, you know, times have changed beautifully in that way.
Mm-hmm. I look at our show as being kind of like the counter to cancel culture, if you will, right? Because like everything is a little bit more complicated than I just hate that. And when we look at the world right now, we're kind of in this space of like, I don't know how much I believe in the American experiment anymore, but I also really want it to work because I don't want it to fail, right? And I think we're in this space of like trying to figure out, I have all of these issues with something, how do I try to make that work? And that's really what I think we feel that way in so many different areas, even if we're not looking at politics, if we're looking at the ways that we look at our entertainment system, if we're looking at capitalism, if we're looking at race and gender and sexuality, there's so many different ways that we see that in our lives every day.
I love that because I feel like it embraces the idea of like both being optimistic about something, but also being like adult enough to call it out when it's not perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I mean, I think a perfect example of that on our show, we had a conversation about Tyler Perry as like Black folks and how we love the fact that he has this whole studio and he owns it all, right? And he's putting people to work. But right, some of the content is like, you know? And like, we can hold both of those things at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Both of those things can be true, for sure. So obviously a big story from the week was the inauguration. On President Biden's first day in office alone, he enacted 17 executive orders reversing former President Trump's actions on issues ranging from climate change to immigration policy. The inauguration celebration itself still had a fair amount of pageantry, I think, especially given the circumstances. So, Jarrett, you said you heard about it. Did you watched, I assume?
I think I probably put in like 15 hours yesterday. By the time I was done, I was like, I can't watch another second, but I also don't want to turn it off. But kind of one of the, as you were kind of going through the list of things that happened yesterday,
yeah.
If we're talking about the gray areas where it's complex and complicated, right?
Uh-huh.
I remember over the last 4 years, continually thinking to myself, I hope that someone is keeping a running list of the things that have to be overturned, rescinded, you know, rejoined, whatever it is. And like, you know, Joe Biden kind of hit the ground running with that list, right? But it also, like, if we back out, if we kind of look at it from a more 35,000 foot level, the reason I was saying, like, I don't know how much I believe in this American experiment anymore is because, like, all of those things are so, like, they can be shifted in a day, right?
Yeah.
And, like, what does that do to our international allies? What does that do to indigenous folks who are concerned about their livelihood? What does it do to our immigrants that are trying to come to this country? What does it do to Black people, you know, who are concerned about racial inequality and those kinds of things? And so it is a very, like, mixed bag of things when we're like, yes, I'm really excited that we got rid of the Muslim ban and that we are, you know, helping separated children find their parents. But I'm also concerned, like, what happens if we just go back in 4 years to Donald Trump again, or to Josh Hawley, or Ted Cruz, Jesus Christ, or, like, whatever, right? Like, what do we do in those kinds of situations? It's frustrating and confusing and you know, complicated.
Of course. Well, and, like, that whiplash in and of itself can be traumatic, you know? So it's like, what do you do with that? So, Travelle, what about you? Did you watch?
So here's the thing. Jarrett told me that it came on at 9 a.m. here in L.A., okay. Uh-huh. And so my plan was,
I wasn't going to call you out about this. I was curious. I was like, now what is he going to say? Huh? What you going
to
say?
My plan was to turn it on at like 8:55 and snuggle in. And so I turned it on at 8:55 and J-Lo was sitting down. Okay. So I had missed so much already. But I was able to catch a part of, you know, Biden's actual swearing in and speech. Mm-hmm. It was cute or whatever, I guess. Jared is the more political one out of us. I pay attention.
Jared does not agree with that.
Pay attention and all of that type of stuff. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of opinions about literally everything. But yeah, I missed the inauguration for the most part.
Well, at least you caught Biden's speech, which I was curious to ask y'all about, because I don't know. I mean, I think, again, speaking of gray area, like, he went hard on that unity message. And, you know, I don't know. I was just really curious how you two felt about, you know, the idea of reaching across the aisle, the idea of finding common ground when, I mean, barely 2 weeks ago, the Capitol was invaded.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like this has been one of my challenges as well. So, like, I've made no secret, Joe Biden was not my candidate. I was born in the same hospital as Kamala Harris, right? Like, so we are both from the Bay Area. I love Kamala Harris, but she was not my candidate either. I didn't think she ran a great presidential campaign, and I adore her. And so when it came time for, like, this ticket, I was very excited that she would be vice president. And my problem with Joe Biden is I can't tell how much of it is naivete and how much of it is what American presidents are supposed to say and do.
And I think also, like, I don't know. I mean, the argument that his level of moderateness is what America needs, I think, is also a pretty, like, in this specific time, is an interesting one.
Yeah, I look at Joe Biden and think, I don't want what you're talking about, but I think the country might need it. And so it's a frustrating thing for me, because I think that Joe Biden has this very rosy language about bipartisanship and reaching out across the aisles, but I don't think that's Black people's work. And so I wrote this piece for Revolt, saying, like, Black people are tired of trying to understand Trump supporters, right? Like, Black and brown and marginalized people have spent our lives having to understand white people, right? And, like, we've spent so much time trying to code switch and assimilate and do this with our hair and speak that kind of way and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I'm tired of that. Like, I don't need to understand the Trump voter anymore. When has the Trump supporter ever tried to reach out to understand me? And so when we hear Joe Biden saying that, I it's coded to me. I hear it and I think, like, that's white people's work, right? Like, that is what white people need to be doing. But then I also feel like Black folks are able to contribute if and when they want to in that kind of work, but I don't think it's inherently ours. So it's difficult. It's really difficult.
What did you think, Travelle?
You know, I mean, I keep thinking back to, so on our show this week, we talked about the election and the foolishness that happened at the Capitol with CNN political commentator Keith Boykin. And one of the things that he pointed out from Biden's speech was this line about justice no longer being deferred. And it struck me as interesting that a president of a country whose government foundation, right, is in white supremacy, in anti-blackness, and in racism, would use that position to say, right, that justice would no longer be deferred, as we see so many activists and organizers trying to hold him accountable, trying to get us to, you know, this promised land of liberation. And so I think, you know, we're at the point where, you know, do we participate in the political economy in the ways that we're supposed to, not only as voters, but also potentially as, you know, mayors and governors and city local officials, or do we just like allow y'all, quote unquote, to do what the heck y'all gonna do, right? Because, you know, so much of I feel like being Black in America, being marginalized in America, queer, trans, etc., being a woman in America in a lot of ways is about fitting into a system and to a world that wasn't made for you in the first place. And how sometimes that makes us complicit in our oppression, complicit in our marginalization. And so despite all of the hope, right, that came out of the election, I'm really tired of the ways in which progressives are supposed to, you know, speak to everyone and bring everyone together, when it's like literally 2 weeks ago, y'all wasn't trying to bring us together. Y'all wasn't trying to bring our perspectives in. And so it's really frustrating, I think, to say the least.
Yeah. So at the inauguration, we also got to hear from the youngest ever inaugural poet, 22-year-old Amanda Gorman.
Yes.
Travelle, did you get a chance to catch that?
I watched it, you know, after the fact. I was first, you know, taken aback by her yellow coat, you know, because Black people look great in yellow. I don't know if y'all know that.
Glowed.
We invented yellow, actually.
it's in the newsletter, if you read the newsletter that we get every week. So.
Well, thanks for updating me. I appreciate it.
You probably don't get it, which is fine.
I don't. But, so the update is nice.
She was amazing. I love how someone noted that, like, before her poem, she had, like, think, like, 40,000 something followers on Twitter, and by the end of it, she had like 200 something thousand. Like, it, and I just hope, I want so much for that young Black girl. I need us all to buy her books and her poems when they come out, all of that.
I want the t-shirt, I want the meme art that goes on the wall. I was kind of shocked that she was 22. Like, because,
wait,
I mean, we know how Black women age, so I don't even have to get into that. But I thought she was like 14. I was like, who is this child? Like, she's amazing. And they were like, 22. I was like, oh, she's a woman. Like, you
but
know
Jared,
what I mean? Like,
we should also tell the people, Jared, that you are old. So that would also give a little
context,
you know, distance. So
are you done?
The people can't see that Jared is giving me a very horrible scowl right now.
Yes. They can hear it though. They can feel it. I am a wonderful 35. Thank you.
Oh yeah, me too. All good.
But no, as we look at Amanda, as we look at Amanda's story, I was just so moved. I was like, oh my God, what is gonna be next for her? Because she has got something amazing coming for sure.
Well, and just her poise, you know, like the way she moved her hands as it was just so beautiful. It was really incredible to
Absolutely.
Watch. She was amazing. So speaking of memes. And in a lot of ways, maybe on the opposite end of the spectrum from Amanda and her voice.
I already know where this is going.
Do you want to set it up for us, Jared?
You have to be talking about Bernie Sanders.
Sure
it has
am.
To be.
I sure am.
I know that the way that you're laughing, it's not the memes about Michelle Obama and this amazing outfit and how she killed the girl. It has to be about this Bernie Sanders sitting in that chair with his legs crossed.
It's so funny.
My favorite thing about it all was when people were like, he had like a manila envelope in his hand in one of the memes.
Errands.
And they're like, Bernie looks like he's also going to go pay the electric bill today and maybe go get a connection
like,
or something.
Here.
Like, what is happening? Like, Bernie just had this whole other look. Like, oh, we fucked today?
Someone has already built a website where you can type in any address that's in Google Street View and it'll just superimpose Bernie on it. That picture of Bernie in the folding chair. And it's just
the internet is an amazing
so
place.
Good.
I love that.
So good.
Okay, before I let y'all go, I want to like completely shift gears here and talk about another story that I am concerned maybe got buried a little bit this week, which is about this Goop vagina candle fiasco. I sent y'all a link about this yesterday. Did you know about it before then, or was it just in the White newsletter?
To be fair, I think because it wasn't in ours. So I'm pretty sure it was only in the White newsletter.
So Gwyneth Paltrow, the actress, also has this company Goop, which is like an absurdly high-end lifestyle brand. She's had a lot of other like vagina adjacent products over the years. Apparently they made a candle and it's called This Smells Like My Vagina. And the idea is that it smells like Gwyneth's vagina. Apparently it includes notes of geranium and bergamot and cedar, in case you were curious. A London woman won one of these candles, and when she lit it, oh, also it's a $75 candle. So this woman in London wins it, and she says when she lit it, it exploded and emitted huge flames with bits flying everywhere.
I mean, listen, if it seems like Gwyneth's candle was having a very good time.
A hot girl summer, if you will.
Right.
Travell Anderson and Jared Hill, hosts of the Fanti podcast. That is F-A-N-T-I. Check them out. They are delightful. In just a minute, former U.S. Senator Carol Moseley Braun calls us from D.C. to tell us about what it was like to see the inauguration firsthand.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Obviously, as we've discussed, the big story of this week was the inauguration of a new president, Joe Biden. And lucky for us, we just happened to know someone who was at the inauguration, Carol Moseley Braun. In 1993, she became the very first Black woman to serve as United States Senator. She represented the great state of Illinois, and she is with us now, calling from her hotel in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Braun, welcome back to Nerdette.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh my gosh, what a trip. The last time we talked was, I don't know, 1 or 2 days after the 2016 election. That feels like so long ago.
It was, because this was a lifetime ago, thank goodness. But it's over.
It was a lifetime ago, wasn't it?
We're moving forward, so I'm really happy to be here for this inauguration.
It's really fascinating to think about when we spoke 4 years ago, because the thing that I kind of kept reminding myself over the course of these last 4 years was the Martin Luther King Jr. quote you shared with us about how the moral arc of the universe always veers towards justice.
Yep. Yep.
Do you think we're a little closer now than we were?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, a lot closer. Again, I've known Joe Biden since 1992. He even tore me in for my ambassadorship to New Zealand. I went to his son Beau's funeral. He and I have stayed in touch over the years. And quite frankly, in this last campaign, I worked hard for him. I think I did 72 different interviews and conversations in support of his candidacy. Because again, I work with him and I know him to be a person of real good character who wants to do the right thing for the American people. And so I have every confidence that he will be a stellar president and do us all proud.
So how many inaugurations have you attended now?
I think this makes third.
Third, okay. Uh-huh. So obviously this one was different than ones you've been to in the past, I imagine, just given the fact of the pandemic and, you know, guests are socially distanced. There were thousands of National Guard members in attendance as well. I'm curious what the mood was like, how it might have compared to the other inaugurations you've been to.
I've got to tell you, the mood was very different, but not in a bad way necessarily. Hmm. The place is an armed camp. You've got so many different layers and levels of law enforcement, everybody from the National Guard, and they're from all over the country, to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, to the Secret Service, to the Metropolitan Police, to the Capitol Police. So you've got lots and lots of law enforcement. You've got local law enforcement, and they just look like ordinary policemen. But then you've got these soldiers who are walking around with AR-15s and AK-47s, And it's like an armed camp. And I've seen it other parts of the world, but I've never seen it here in the United States. I'll tell you something, they were all wonderful and all very nice. In fact, two of the Secret Service agents, when I get home, I'll write a thank you note about this, but they saved me because you can't get around because they've got these barriers and burns everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so there's no traffic. And so I wound up walking 15 blocks in heels to try to get to get from the hotel to the Capitol. And when I thought I was just going to collapse, these two Secret Service guys, it turned out they were, and they gave me a ride back in their Humvee or whatever the glorified golf cart was. And so they got me as close to the hotel as they could get because there were so many different zones.
Wow.
You couldn't move around. Yeah, that was one kind of pain in the neck part of this whole thing. But again, other than that, it was a great mood, and everybody is just so happy. Mm. I mean, I don't know how to explain it to you, but it's like a weight has been lifted off the city and the people here. And everybody's just optimistic and hopeful and prayerful for Joe and Kamala that they will be able to get our country back on track and restore, as Joe liked to say during the campaign, restore the soul of America.
There were a lot of really lovely moments from the inauguration just watching on TV, but I'm curious for you actually there. Was there any particular moment that you think you'll carry with you just remembering it?
Absolutely. When Joe Biden started to give his acceptance speech or his inauguration mm-hmm. speech, in almost miraculous way, the sun came out. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there in this very, frigid, almost like Chicago cold, right? So you're sitting there, it's cold as all get out and kind of overcast, not really badly, but then all of a sudden, he gets to the beginning of his speech and the sun breaks through the clouds. It was the most miraculous moment ever. And while, the rest of the ceremony was wonderful. I didn't hear all of Kamala's speech. I wish I could have because I call my little daughter, right? So a little nothing. But I did hear her get sworn in. And so it was just a magnificent day. For that, and made walking 15 blocks in heels worth it.
There you go. So wait, though, I have to ask you, was it really frigid? Because I actually looked it up. I was like, why are all these people so bundled up? And it said it was 42 degrees, Carol.
Right. But there was wind. There was wind. And it was really cold.
Okay. Okay.
And so, and I don't know if it's the wind that did it, but whatever, it was freezing out there.
So even as a Chicago person, you'd say that?
Oh, yeah. At one point, I had on two pairs of gloves.
So you talked about how pleased you are that Joe Biden is president. Now, I want to talk about Kamala for a second. You just described her as your daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, you were the first Black woman to serve as a U.S. senator. In 2017, Kamala was the second. Now she's the most powerful woman in American history.
Right.
What was it like for you to see that happen?
Oh, I was immensely just delighted. And I think we should all celebrate the progress that this represents for our country. Yeah. I mean, it's not just a compliment and it's not just a good thing for Kamala Harris, but it shows progress because culture precedes politics. And the culture has moved to the point that we now have a Black Asian female as Vice President of the United States. It's the most miraculous thing and wonderful thing. And I just hope, what I said to people when asked about it, I said, I hope we get to the point where she can be treated no different than people treat Mike Pence, if you will. That is say, because right now she's being scrutinized and will be scrutinized, every word, every nuance, every interpretations about what color hair she's eyeshadow she's got on. Mm-hmm. And so the point is, when you can treat her like you treat Mike Pence, then we'll know we've arrived.
So does that mean when we're just allowed to be as frumpy as we want?
Exactly. Exactly. When she can be frumpy and she can be grouchy, and when she gets to the point she can be again like Mike Pence and it be okay, then as a country we'll know we have, the culture has evolved, and that's what we're witnessing is the evolution of our culture here in the United States. And I think that part to me is the most significant part of her ascension to the vice presidency. That she's moving forward. She stepped, we're only 100 years away from women getting the vote in the United States. I mean, this is the, yeah. the centennial of the right to vote. And so to have a woman vice president 100 years after women were given the right to vote, were basically enfranchised as citizens, is really profound, I think. And it's something I think every American should celebrate.
Yeah. So last time you came on Nerdette, as I mentioned, it was right after the presidential election in 2016. Another thing you said that really stuck with me was, I mean, you were adamant that we will get a woman president here in the United States. You said this is the greatest and most powerful country in the world. There's no reason that we haven't had a woman president. We will one day get it.
Yeah.
You think we're closer?
Oh, we absolutely are closer. We are absolutely closer. And Kamala Harris starts off, barring unforeseen, because you just never know what's going to happen tomorrow even in this life, but assuming for a moment that he does not run, she starts off as the natural choice of the Democratic Party to be the candidate for president. And I'm just hoping that we will have gotten there. I mean, little girls, I actually had somebody, and I was actually a little annoyed about it. I had somebody, one of my friends who lives in England, send me a picture of this little girl with a Kamala Harris t-shirt on and asked if I would give it to her.
And you were annoyed?
I was annoyed because the email was, could you give this to Kamala Harris? It's like, no. I haven't answered.
She's busy.
I haven't answered his WhatsApp text yet. But, you know, it's like, what? So anyway. But yeah, so you've got little girls all over the world looking up to her and saying, you know, if she can do that, so can I. I can be president.
Yeah.
You know, this little girl's in English, so she can't be queen, but you know.
Well, Ambassador Braun, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Former U.S. Senator and Ambassador to New Zealand, Carol Mosley Braun. What a gem of a human. All right, that's it for today's show. But before I let you go, I want to just take a moment to remember author Ursula K. Le Guin. She died 3 years ago on January 22nd, and she was a real pioneer in her own right. Her books of speculative fiction are excellent. I want to leave you with this quote from Ursula. As great scientists have said, and as all children know, it is above all by the imagination that we achieve perception and compassion and hope. The show is produced by me along with Justin Ball. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.